The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, this is Chad Dotson. You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, episode number 139. With me today, my good friend, baseball author extraordinaire, Joel Luckup. How you doing today, Joel?
Well, you know, there's baseball and there's author, but I don't know if you need to start adding French into it as well.
Well, we certainly know at least two of those three words in that description are accurate.
Yeah.
Joel, I got a question for you. We are going to have a question of the show later that was your idea, and I think it's a great topic for the show. But I really, the more important question is, how many Pokemon have you caught today?
I have not caught any.
Oh, come on, I don't believe that.
No, I haven't. My son plays, and his device is only Wi-Fi enabled, so he has to attract them to our house.
Oh,
so our house gets swarmed with Pokemon, and those things, they don't clean up after themselves.
Oh gosh, yeah, you're gonna have to vacuum more often. It's gonna be awful.
Yeah,
the Pokemon. I had about an hour to kill yesterday with my son, and that's what we had to do was go hunt for Pokemon. So
yeah,
it's taken over the world.
It has. It's crazy. You know, it's like Reds baseball. You know, I mean, it's all anybody's talking about.
Oh, just a national obsession. Both of those topics. So this is episode 139 of the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. It is, but it's also the last episode because next week we're transitioning to all Pokemon Go all the time.
Oh, cool. Red Pokemon Nation.
Something like that. But it is episode 139, which seems difficult to believe. And the team that we're talking about now may not be the best Reds team that we've experienced in our lifetime.
Probably not. It's up there with some of the worst, actually, if not the worst.
Yeah, I was looking at it earlier today, as a matter of fact, and of course they're on pace to lose 104 games, which would be the worst in terms of number of losses. Only other time the Reds lost more than 100 was 82 when they lost 101 games, but also it would be the second worst losing percentage. That is what it's not a winning percentage, it's a losing percentage. Second worst in Reds history, I think 1934 maybe.
Right, and I want to say something real quick. We always give credit to the 1982 team as being the only 100-loss team. If you give that 1934 team only played 152 games, you give them 10 more games, they're going to lose at least one. They went 52-99.
Yeah.
They're going to lose at least one more game if they have 10 more. So, you know, get off the case of the 82 team, okay?
Well, we can stay on their case a little bit because 101 losses is bad, but you're right. They're not the worst team in Reds history.
Right.
They're not the best team in Reds history either, I'll say that. But that Red 34 Reds team, you said 99 losses, right? Their winning percentage, .344. I mean, that's just – and that was in the middle of a stretch where the Reds had five straight years with a winning percentage below 400, which is
right.
Unprecedented in Reds history.
Right, and then, actually, they were bad for a couple more years after 34, and then they brought in Bill McKechnie, and things really started to turn around. So, I guess what I'm saying is we need to exhume Bill McKechnie.
I figured that's exactly what you were saying. I'm on board with that. They did. They turned around after just an awful run. A couple years later, hey, they're in the World Series, and they win one. And that's sort of been, if you look back at the history of the Reds franchise, certainly I'm not projecting that's what this team's going to do, I hope. But some of their worst times came very shortly before some of the best times. So we can hope.
And some of their worst times came immediately after their best times as well. So, it all evens out.
It's a big roller coaster with this organization.
Yeah.
What's going on with the Reds this week? We had the All-Star game. Adam Duvall and Jay.
Well, we
Bruce.
Didn't have it.
Well, we did.
Somebody took it from us.
Well, that's true. We used to have it. What
I
happened?
Thought
to
we
that?
Owned it. I thought it was going to be here forever.
Yeah, another example of Walt Jocketty ruining this organization. He even lost the. He got got rid of Cueto, got rid of Frazier,
I blame Bud Selig actually.
Well, now listen, I'll always.
We used to open in Cincinnati every year, but now the All-Star Game's elsewhere too. Come on.
Yeah, I mean this. as if the Reds team weren't playing poorly enough, we got all these other items surrounding the team where we just can't catch a break. So San Diego has it now because they're such a wonderful organization, I guess. They do have a nice park, and, you know, they did a good job hosting it, I guess. It looked like it was fun. I didn't go.
I didn't go either. Yeah. They didn't offer me follow-up tickets from last year.
I know, right? You'd have thought we'd have gotten first option since we were there last year.
I know.
Well,
so much for that.
We did have a couple of guys from the Reds organization that were allowed to go, Adam Duvall and Jay Bruce, both of whom having good years. Were you surprised? I know some people were surprised. I wasn't particularly, but were you surprised that when they first announced the rosters that Duvall got the call instead of Jay Bruce?
No. To me, like for the stuff that people look at, especially, you know, when they're only looking at a half season, to me, it was a 50-50 proposition between the two of them. They both are having, you know, pretty good years. But honestly, I mean, it's not like either of them are world beaters anyway. And at least with Duvall, he's close to the league lead in home runs. So, you know, he has something that you could hang your hat on there.
Yeah, I thought the home runs would be the deciding factor. He's been right around the league lead for most of the year. And a good story. Happy for Adam Duvall, you know.
Yeah, hey, good for him. I suspect that'll be his only appearance, but, you know, good for him. He got one, you know. It's more than I've done.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you say it's probably the only time he's ever going to make it, and that's, to some people, may sound like a criticism of his career. But, man, no way. You know, how many players in baseball history have made an All-Star game? You know, not that many. So, I mean, there have been some not very good players that have made it, but still, it's a great accomplishment. It's a great story. Love that kid. Well, he's not really a kid so much anymore, but
no, he's. I mean, he's one of those. You had a nice tweet today saying that, you know, Jay Bruce is 17 months older than Adam Duvall, which may be very surprising to some people because, you know, Adam Duvall, given that he just came up, gets labeled with this young kid label, and, you know, Jay Bruce, who's been here since '04, '02, whatever, you know, way back when we used to. I don't know what I was going to say. I was going to make some wisecrack about the fact that he's been here forever, okay?
Oh, man, that was going to be a great wisecrack. I could see it coming, yeah.
I'll tell you what. I'll write it down, and then I'll put it on Twitter.
No
context.
That'll be like everything else on Twitter.
I know. So, anyway, but, you know, Duvall, I mean, to expect – well, I think the faulty thing to do with Duvall is to think that he's just getting rolling, that this is just the beginning of things. I think Duvall is a classic case of somebody who is probably – he may have, you know, two, three, four good years. But, you know, guys that tend to get to the majors late and have a late peak like that don't have a very long peak. That's just the tendency of history, and maybe he'll buck the trend. But, you know, enjoy him while he's here, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot to cheer about on this team. Might as well cheer for him.
Yeah, why take that as a sort of a criticism or a reason to be unhappy with what we have, I guess, because Duvall, maybe he's only going to be an above-average player if he is above average, and he has been this year, but for two or three years. But man, that's, you know, let's take that. It's not his fault that he's not good enough to be a superstar for the next 15 years, and maybe he will be. I guess stranger things may have happened, but... You think of guys like Chris Sabo, who came up late, and, you know, by age 30, he's pretty much finished as an effective big leaguer.
Well, I think we're going to see similar stuff with Todd Frazier. You know, Todd Frazier is probably going to have another couple good years, and really, I mean, to be honest, outside of the home runs, the year he's having this year isn't that great. But he's going to have more. You know, he'll probably have some big home run years, a couple more big home run years, and then. You know, then he's going to kind of probably fall off. It's not uncommon. It's not a weird trend. It's just things that happen for players that come up late.
Right. It is the way it is, and you're already seeing some of that with Frazier. And I think the Reds probably, in retrospect, they're going to believe they parted ways with him. Wish they'd have gotten more of a return, but parted ways at the right time.
Well, let's be fair. They sold a little bit late on him.
They did.
They could have sold him. They could have traded him in July last year and probably gotten a much better package for him, because he was coming off of. He was kind of a glamour guy, one of those guys that teams will trade for to say, "Hey, look, we made this move for this guy, and, you know, he had his big moment." Not that like I don't want to get too hung up on the past, but I think they could have traded him a little bit sooner and gotten a little bit more. Maybe not a lot more, but a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so. And to me, just completely from the outside, a lot of the reason why they didn't had to be just the public relations. You're talking about the public relations value from the team that trades for him. It's a similar public relations hit for the Reds if they dealt him after just what a wonderful half season he had last year and then all the excitement at the Home Run Derby.
Right.
He was in the Home Run Derby again this year. Did you watch that?
I did. It was so much fun. Like, the changes that they've made to the Home Run Derby improved it immensely.
It's a completely different event now.
I know.
I love it. Whereas before, it was, I liked it.
Yeah, but it kind of got old because they took a lot of pitches and, you know, there wasn't that clock that they were racing against to try to catch up. And I know there's not supposed to be a clock in baseball, but, you know, in some cases a clock is a pretty nice thing. And it really worked out great last year because they had to cut the time shorter on the timing.
Right.
Last year, they
were expecting rain.
Because they were expecting rain and they didn't want to go too late. And actually, you know, they kind of fell backwards into a better format, I'm guessing, because I think if it had been longer, the players would have been getting much more tired and you'd see fewer home runs as they go on. I think it works the way they have it right now. I think it works very well. And it was a very exciting and fun event.
It was. And I couldn't agree more, regardless of the fact that it was exciting for Reds fans because of what Frazier did last year. But just the worst part about it in the past, other than Chris Berman's announcing, the worst part was they stand there and take pitch after pitch, and nobody wants to see players standing up there taking pitches. So
you hear that, Joey Votto?
Oh, man, there's the pull quote from this episode. this year, Adam Duvall, of course, again, great story. Happy for that kid. He participated in the Home Run Derby and got by the first round. Who was he against? Carlos Gonzalez in the first round?
Yeah, he was against Gonzalez in the first round. No, was he?
It's been at least 3 days ago. How am I supposed to remember that, Joel?
I don't remember who he faced.
No, it was not. It wasn't Cargo. It was
Frazier faced Cargo.
Yeah, Will Myers.
Yeah, that's right. It was Will Myers. It was the hometown guy.
The hometown boy.
Yeah.
Well, that's the first time I've ever made a mistake, Joel. It had to happen eventually.
I know. And I'm happy. I'm excited that I was here to see it.
Yeah, very exciting. But Duvall and Frazier both, and that was a neat moment.
Mm-hmm.
Duvall and Frazier against each other, the Red and the former Red, in the event where Frazier really sort of excited all of Red Leg Nation last year. It was fun. I wish Duvall had won it this year, but go Frazier.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it was, I don't know. I was happy with the way that Duvall, I mean, despite the fact that, you know, they barely even talked about him while he was crushing home runs, I was happy with the way he performed. He looked good.
He did. Yeah. I mean, again, there's nothing about the Duvall story that I just don't love. I'm happy for him. And I love the fact that he was a throw in on the Mike Leake trade and, you know, and now he won a spot. He grabbed hold of that brass ring when he got the opportunity. Good for him.
Yeah. And he's having a fine season. Did we mention that? He's having a fine season.
He is having a fine season. He's not the next Barry Bonds, but he's having a fine season.
Yeah.
Hey, did you notice that the starting pitcher for the National League, the All-Star Games, a guy that used to play for the Reds?
No, I saw it was Cuto. Was that his name?
Yeah, that's it. Cuto, Johnny Cuto.
Yeah.
And again, we've said it 10 times about Duvall, but good for Cueto. You know, it's his first time he's actually ever gotten into an All-Star game. So,
yeah. Well, and you know, I posted a stat, you know, a list since 2011. The only pitcher who has a lower pre All-Star game ERA is Clayton Kershaw.
Oh, he's
Kershaw.
Good.
Yeah, and Kershaw's been selected for 6 All-Star teams since 2011. That was only Cueto's third. That he's been selected to. So, was that right, or is it his second? No, I think it was his third. No, I don't know. I think it was his whatever.
It was his second or third. I think it was his second, but I'm not 100%
sure.
Yeah,
I think you're right. It was his second.
But
we are so prepared today.
I know, right? A lot of research went into this.
But anyway, the point being that I think Cueto is – I mean, we've always known this in Cincinnati. He was very underappreciated. He had that year – what was that, 2012, was it, when he should have been selected, but Tony La Russa was the manager, and basically La Russa didn't pick him because Tony La Russa holds grudges and is a jerk.
That pretty much covers it, yeah.
Yeah, and even La Russa, like when they were – when the Diamondbacks were courting Cueto during the offseason, even La Russa admitted that they had to like try to clear the air about that 2012 selection because, you know, obviously he knows that Cueto deserved to be there, but whatever. The past is the past, right?
I guess, but, you know, with the Reds, really the past is kind of all we have. but, yeah, the point stands about Cueto, and the fact that he's only made that the All-Star team that number of times, and Kershaw, and Kershaw's a better pitcher, but still, it makes me want to write a sternly worded letter to someone.
Well, you know, and to be fair, Cueto was hurt in 2011. He was hurt in 2013. He probably didn't deserve to be selected either of those years because, I mean, he had a good ERA, but he only had like 60 innings or something like that. But he really deserved to be there in 2012. He was clearly one of the best pitchers in the league at that point. And in 2015, he probably deserved to be selected, although he was a little more borderline given the fact that, you know, there were other deserving Reds and then there were, you know, having to fit players from all the teams, and the Reds weren't exactly a juggernaut of a squad. But he probably deserved at least two more All-Star selections, and you know, it's just the way it goes, I guess.
Yeah. You know, there will never be a time we'll always talk about Cueto, I think, on this podcast, and there's never going to be a time that I watch that guy pitch that I just don't sort of marvel at him. He's going to end up being one of my favorite players I ever saw in a Reds uniform, and so I still have very warm thoughts about old Johnny.
And how nice of it was it when he came to town and he let the Reds score six runs? That was very nice of him.
Just like Johnny, always thinking about the Reds.
Uh-huh.
Always. What a great guy. What a great guy. All right, well, let's maybe shift a little bit towards the future. And you know, I thought we'd talk about Amir Garrett playing in his second straight futures game. But, you know, what can we say about Amir Garrett other than that he's doing very well this season in the minor leagues, and hopefully he will be with the Reds sooner rather than later. But you know, I'm looking at this rotation for the second half and the bullpen, and I'm thinking, hey, you know, this team might be able to avoid that 100 loss plateau. Am I crazy?
Well, I mean, we definitely need to see some improvements. I think over like the last 15 games, the rotation's got an ERA approaching 7. The starting rotation does. Strangely enough, the bullpen is around 3.5. So, you know, we need to find a balance. Maybe not have both, you know, one suck and the other be good. How about, you know, somewhere in between?
But they're good pitchers in the rotation. They're not bad pitchers.
No. No, and this is the thing with a young rotation. And we saw this, you know, in 2008 and 2009 and with Cueto and with Homer Bailey trying to figure it out. And it just takes guys – it takes guys a while. Pitching in the big leagues is hard. And it's a rare pitcher that can come up and dominate right out of the gate. You know, your Jose Fernandez or your Clayton Kershaw or somebody like that. You know, and we don't – there's no shame in saying that we don't have a Clayton Kershaw right now. It's unlikely that we're going to have anybody. I don't see any of these guys that are, you know, coming up as necessarily your perennial Cy Young contenders. Now they might develop into that, but you don't need that. You need good quality pitching, and I think you're going to get that from these guys as time goes on.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the Reds announced that they're going to shuffle up their starting rotation for second half. And look at these guys. Di Sclafani, who's been fantastic since coming back. John Lamb is going to be the number two starter, and that's a sort of a false title. But just in the second half, he's going to go after Disco. And Lamb is what he is.
And that well, and that's mainly because he's trying to mix up the lefties. He doesn't want to go lefty, 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 lefty.
Right.
Like he had been.
Yeah, and of course they wanted to move.
I think, well, we only have three lefties. I think I said four lefties, but go ahead.
Well, there's all kinds of lefties. I can't keep them straight. But Dan Straley third, and then Finnegan, Brandon Finnegan fourth, and a part of the reason why they sort of moved him back, not because he has been struggling lately, although he has been, but he's going to be getting close to his innings limit around the end of the year, and so they want to try to keep him, just keep an eye on his innings. And then Cody Reed, who has been bad. There's no other way to put it. But Cody Reed. So, you know, Disco, Lamb, Straley, Finnegan, Reed. You know, I'm not sure that Lamb is going to be in the Reds rotation long term. I'm almost positive Straley won't, although I think Straley can help this team. They've got him under control for a long time. Can be a bullpen guy, swing guy. But but we'll get to see some of these guys second half. And it's not like the guys who started in the first half, the Adelmans and the I had a list up here earlier. Oh man, Alfredo Simon, John Moscott. Although Moscott, I don't know, maybe Tim Adelman, Daniel Wright, Tim Melville. Yeah, I mean, those guys got 24 starts in the first half of the year, and none of those guys are likely, hopefully, fingers crossed, to start a game the rest of the way. So, I would think the rotation, even though they've been, as you noted, bad recently, I would think they're probably due to be okay, I guess, the rest of the way.
Hopefully, you know, and then Homer's coming back, you know, so getting Homer back will help. And, yeah, I think they'll do fine. I think they're not, like you said, they may avoid 100 losses. The rotation may help them avoid 100 losses, but, you know, we're going to see flashes. I bet we see Brandon Finnegan go on another 3 or 4 start stretch here. Maybe not immediately, but at some point where he's going to probably look really dominant. And I suspect that Cody Reed is going to have a start here and a start there, and maybe string together a couple starts where he's going to look dominant. And that's just the way young pitching goes. And that's what makes it fun. To see guys who struggle develop into and figure things out. That's one of the things that I think helped us fall in love with Johnny Cueto as a pitcher, because we saw him struggle and we saw him have days where he looked like he was starting to figure it out, and days where then he struggled again, and then suddenly he really put it together, and that's really fun.
Sure, and that I think that's one of the few things that gives us something to watch in this second half. It's something to me is pretty exciting. Let's watch how these guys are going to develop, because the more these guys that do develop into above-average pitchers, the better it's going to be for the next good Reds team. And there are a number of guys with some potential. They won't all pan out, but watching that process and seeing who does is going to be fun. I'm really particularly excited to watch Finnegan and Reed. At some point, you've got to believe that Cody Reed's going to start showing us some more consistent flashes of what he's been showing in the minor leagues, which has just been dominant at times. So the Reds only have to go 31-42 the rest of the way to avoid losing 100 games. That seems achievable, maybe.
Yeah, dream big.
Yeah, dream big. Let's try to get to 99 losses instead of 100. So you're right about the bullpen as well, just quickly. You know, having Roselli Iglesias, and I still hope, have hopes that he'll be a starter at some point in years to come. Michael Lorenzen, Tony Cingrani settled nicely into the bullpen role. You know, it's got to be better than what we've seen. It has to be, and it has been recently.
Yeah, it definitely has been, and I think some of that is the addition of Iglesias and Lorenzen. You know, and even for a while there, Josh Smith was a pretty good, was doing pretty well. He kind of gotten lit up, three of the last four times he's gone out, but, you know, having guys down there that, have stuff, which is not, you really can't say that about, the bullpen at the beginning of the season. But as the season has gone on, they've added guys like Iglesias and like Lorenzen, and, you know, Cingrani is kind of up and down. But you get rid of guys, guys like, no offense to these guys, but guys like Drew Hayes and Steve Delabar and Lane Thompson and, those guys, it's just, They're not the key to a good bullpen. They're guys that come up because you have injuries on a bad team.
Yeah, I counted up, and you just mentioned some of them. I counted up 9 relievers who pitched some amount of time for the big league club this year who have ERAs, and, of course, ERA for relievers. We'll talk about that. But have ERAs of 6.30 or higher. Caleb Cotham, J.C. Ramirez, Kevious Sampson, A.J. Morris, Drew Hayes, Steve Delabar, Dian Diaz, Lane Sampson, your buddy, and then everyone's friend and everyone's punching bag, J.J. Hoover. So that's a lot of bad pitching that is being replaced by some guys with a little bit more ability. So, you know, they're not gonna be historically bad second half like they were in the first half. We can hope.
And the nice thing about that is when you look at the bullpen right now and you look at some of those ERAs, you know, you've got Iglesias at 2.66 and Blake Wood at 3.19 and Cingrani at 3.20 and Lorenzen at 3.38. Those are much more like the numbers that you want to see out of a bullpen. And obviously, those are going to fluctuate, a bad outing here, or a stretch of good outings. It's going to go up and down. But that's where you want your bullpen, you know, ERA range to be in. You don't want, you know, a lot of these guys down in the sixes and sevens and eights and 19s.
Right, yeah, it's just been to watch this bullpen the first half has been it's been almost funny because it's been so brutal. All right, well, you know, let's shift over, I guess, to the question of the show. And Joel, this was your question, and I don't know whether you want to try to answer it first or you want me to, but let me go ahead and throw it out. What radical idea would you suggest the Reds experiment with the rest of the season? I bet since you suggested this that you have something radical you want to propose.
Well, I don't know if I have a couple ideas, and I'll answer one because we were just talking about the bullpen, and I've mentioned this on Twitter, but I'd like to see the Reds really rethink the way you build a bullpen. And they've kind of done it some with the way they're using Lorenzen and Iglesias, more so Iglesias. Using these guys to throw, like plan on them going into a game to throw 2 or 3 innings. And regardless of what, you know, how well the starting pitcher pitched, obviously if the starting pitcher can reach 7 or 8 innings, you let them do that. But, not just having, you know, the kind of like Josh Smith guys be your 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 inning guys, but guys like Iglesias or Lorenzen or even somebody like John Lamb, basically the idea being have them go through a lineup once. That's your goal, you know, and if they can do that in 3 innings, then they pitch the final 3 innings. But if it takes them a whole inning or if it takes them 2 innings to do that, then they only pitch the 2 innings. And so your mentality then becomes, I'm going to face everybody in the lineup once. Obviously, you can mix and match a little bit. You know, if you've got, Bryce Harper coming up and Lorenzen's on the mound and you've got a lefty in the bullpen and you don't want to force Lorenzen to have to make that out unless you feel comfortable that he can. But if you can bring in a lefty that might be able to control Harper a little bit better, especially if there's men on base, then yeah. So you're going to have, my idea would be you would have a mixture of a bullpen that would be 3 or 4 guys that are going to be 2 or 3 inning guys, and then 2 or 3 guys who are going to be your situational guys. Now, the only reason this idea is radical is because of the rise of the modern bullpen. This idea was not radical back in the 70s. It was the way things went. But I think when you look at what the Reds' organizational strength is right now, and that is young starting pitching throughout the organization, there's plenty of young starting pitching. Not all of those guys are going to pan out. But if they're good enough to be starting pitchers, they may be good enough to be one-time through-the-order type relievers. I think one of the big changes that the Reds would have to make then is telling these guys, look, we're going to compensate you based on different criteria than maybe you've been brought up expecting to be compensated on. We're not going to worry about things like saves, because if you have a 2 or 3 inning mentality, then you're going to have multiple guys getting saves because that guy's already in the game. He's pitching tonight. That's his night to pitch kind of thing. And so he may end up closing the game out and getting the save. But you know, you tell these guys, you give them different criteria. You know, maybe we'll do it based on innings pitched as well as ERA and as well as strikeouts or, you know, getting out of jams or whatever kind of metrics you want to come up with. But, you know, we always talk, you know, you always hear baseball people say, well, you know, you can't force that kind of a change. Pitchers need their roles. Well, you're just redefining what their roles are, and it's happened throughout history. It's just because in the past their redefinition of roles was always that, you know, they're going to pitch less and less. You know, that's change that, right?
Yeah, right. Doesn't necessarily mean that has to, those roles have to be the same. You're right. They have changed. And this is, that is sort of it's not really a radical idea, as you note, when you're looking at the entire history of the game, but considering the way pitchers are used now, it is. But with all the, even sort of the old school baseball guys will tell you, well, you know, some guys struggle second time through the lineup or third time through the lineup. And certainly, I guess almost everyone, I would imagine, their numbers are first time through certainly better than later in the game. And so that seems, while it may be we're classifying it as radical, it seems in some ways obvious. And it makes me wonder why some, I guess thinking outside the box is not something that major league managers are noted for, but it sort of surprises me that someone hasn't tried some, you know, at least moving in that direction a little bit, because it makes all kinds of sense.
Well, and, you know, to give you some examples, you know, and unfortunately these numbers aren't particularly good for some of these guys either way. But like you look at, Iglesias in his career, first time, this is just as a starting pitcher, but you can, I mean, as a reliever, his numbers are similar. His first time through the order, batters are hitting .202 with a .601 OPS. The second time through the order, it's .266 with a .760 OPS. You know, Michael Lorenzen, his first time through the order, batting average of .252, OPS of .800, obviously less than ideal. That's as a starting pitcher. The number goes down a little bit. It's .234 batting average as a reliever, .779 first time through the order. But his second time through the order, it's .321 batting average with a .962 OPS. You know, those are huge jumps. And so some guys, and Lorenzen, so it was when I was looking at Lorenzen, he was one of the guys when I started thinking about this. Not to act like it's like, oh man, I'm like, this is like, you know, Einstein sitting there in the patent desk coming up with having his brilliant insight.
That's exactly what it's like. Don't sell yourself short.
But the idea is that, you know, these guys, they can be much more effective one time through the order, and you know, they're already stretched out both physically and mentally to be starting pitchers. So why pigeonhole them back into a one inning role when you've kind of already got them in this mentality, right? So
it wasn't that long ago, really, in terms of certainly a lot of the people that are running the game. It wasn't that long ago when you had relievers who would go multiple innings more often. Yeah, I think back to, you know, Goose Gossage and those guys. But even the Nasty Boys, you know, sometimes go a couple innings, things like that. It wasn't that long ago. This shouldn't be that radical.
But here's the thing, and I actually just – so I'm reading The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, which is an excellent book. If you get a chance to read it, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's on my list, yeah.
But they so for those not familiar with the book, two baseball prospectus writers, Ben Lindbergh and Sam Miller, got to basically run the player personnel on a low-level independent league team out in California. And, you know, they talked about trying to change the role of the guy that was labeled as their closer and trying to use him differently, and how the manager was rejecting the idea because the game has taught him that you need a closer. And around the same time as this was happening, I guess Houston Street came out and said that if they tried to change his role and have him pitch in just higher leverage situations, that he was going to have to or that he was going to quit the game, that he is a ninth inning reliever, blah, blah, blah. And And so they talk about in the book that he has been brought up this way. This is the only way he's – like he was a closer in college. And so we talk about guys like Goose Gossage. But guys that are in the game now, right now, they've played with pitching roles essentially what they are their entire careers. From little league when there were, you know, dads who were trying to coach like they were big league managers, you know. So it may not seem radical to a couple old farts like you and I, but it certainly is going to be radical to the younger guys that have been brought up in a game where there's a closer and where there's specific innings that guys are supposed to be pitching.
Well, to the players, certainly it's going to be radical, and it's going to be not well received in a lot of quarters. There's no question about that. But
that's why I say you go for the starters, and you do this with the converted starters, and then you tell them, you explain to them that they will be compensated as if whatever, but that they're not just middlemen. That aren't, they're not going to be getting middleman money, that they can still earn, good relief money doing it this way.
Right. This is what we value in terms of production, and you're going to be compensated commensurate with the value you're providing to our organization. I think that's one way to frame it that may get a little bit more buy-in from people. Also, I think you start in rookie ball and single A, and this is sort of the organizational philosophy. And by the time some of those guys get up through to the majors, and it's really probably going to be in the higher minors when some of these starting pitchers have begun to flame out a little bit and it's looking like their only option is the bullpen. Hey, look at this. We, as an organization, we value somebody that can go two or three innings, go a time through the lineup effectively. You've demonstrated you can do that as a starter. You've struggled later, and so maybe you're not going to be a starter long term. And, of course, obviously you don't necessarily have to have the conversation in these terms. But I think if you wanted to implement an organization-wide philosophy, you could certainly get some buy-in on that, I would think. But it's going to take commitment from everyone to sort of change the way people view that.
And, unfortunately, I think there still will be a closer.
I think we're destined to have that forever.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at a guy like Iglesias. Well, look at a guy like Aroldis Chapman, who I know you and I both wanted him to be a starter, but that's a guy who was a dominant ninth inning closer. But man, wouldn't it have been great to have that guy for a couple innings, three innings during the point in the game when we really needed him? And how much more value would that have provided to the Reds than coming in with a 3-run lead or and sometimes he had high leverage situations in the ninth, but too often he didn't. So something like that would have made Chapman so much more valuable to a team. But again, that's a change that'll have to be made over many, many years to get rid of the closer. I think that's here to stay, thanks to Jerome Holtzman and the save stat.
Mm-hmm. So what's your radical idea then?
Well, I'm not. You're making me feel bad. I'm not nearly as radical. I'm not trying to change the ways that teams fundamentally look at the roles on the team. I'm thinking for the Reds more in terms of what are things they could do that would be considered radical that would, I think would be radical. It's so radical that I don't think they'll ever do it. But the first thing is Brandon Phillips to the bench. Love what Brandon's brought to the Reds in his career. Tell him you're on the bench. I move Suarez to second base, Peraza to shortstop for the rest of the season. Jesse Winker, presuming he's healthy again now, to left field. Adam Duvall at either third base or right field, depending on whether. And of course, Peraza to short and Duvall, whoever's in right field, it's all dependent upon whether Cozart and or Bruce are traded. But I think I'd do it for the rest of the season and say, here you go. And I start them six days a week, specifically Peraza and Winker. Here's your chance. And I want to see what Suarez can do at second base as well. I like Suarez at second. I like Peraza at short. Given the current personnel in the organization, those are the guys that I like in those positions. And I'd do it tomorrow. And I'd say, Brandon, I'm sorry, but this is what it is. It's however it ends with Brandon Phillips, it's not going to end well at this point. So rip the Band-Aid off. So I'm not
the problem, And I'm not opposed to your idea, but the problem with the idea of ripping the Band-Aid off is that the festering wound will still be there, if that makes sense.
Right.
It's ripping the Band-Aid off would be, doing what Jason Linden said on Twitter today and releasing Brandon, which is never going to happen, but yeah.
Well, I don't think sending him to the bench is ever going to happen either. They're just not going to do it. These are human beings we're talking about. Nobody wants to do that to Brandon Phillips, I'm afraid. Nobody wants to make that hard decision. But, okay, so let's say the festering wound is still there and he's being awful in the clubhouse and he's, making everybody miserable. So what? I mean, how much does that hurt this year's team? Are they going to lose more games because of that? What's the downside to having him on the bench? Because I think that's more. I don't think it's likely at all. But I think that's more likely than them just saying, "Hey, that we owe him this money. It's a sunk cost. Let's just cut bait." Because nobody's going to trade for him at this point, or trade him somewhere, and maybe he'll agree. Tell him you're on the bench if you're not. They don't accept a trade, and just pay most of his salary just to get rid of him. What's the worst that happens though if he's unhappy and on the bench?
I don't know, because I'm not sure he has a lot of influence in the clubhouse. So that would be the only way that it would be an incredible negative if he was, putting bad seed, being a bad seed and, creating bad mojo for guys that are trying to, figure out how to be a professional. I think that's one issue that they probably, as an organization, would probably be worried about, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, and they're would probably be right to worry about that some, but I wonder what's the worst that could happen. It's just, however the Brandon Phillips era ends in Cincinnati, and the end is closer probably than Brandon wants to believe it is, it was never destined to end well. Brandon is who he is, and hey, full credit to the guy. He's going to be in the Reds Hall of Fame someday. He's had a magnificent career. One of the, I got an argument that he's the second best second baseman ever to play for the Reds. So it's going to be ugly one way or the other.
Yeah. So, well, the season's going to be ugly. So
right.
Might as well just watch the whole place burn.
let's burn the place to the ground. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't think my idea was as radical as yours, but I don't think either of those are likely to happen. Certainly not in the second half.
It's fun to play that game, right?
Well, that's about the only game we can play these days because the product on the field is not great. We got what if, and talking about what could be in the future is a fun game because there are some pieces available to the Reds that could be a good future. And so looking at these different scenarios, I love with the current personnel that they're likely to have. I say current, but that they're likely to have over the next few years in that bullpen. I love your idea.
So, mm-hmm.
The second half is here. I guess let's watch it and see what happens. Any predictions quickly before we wrap up?
Pain.
I absolutely set that one on a tee for you.
I think we'll see improved pitching, but rocky. I think it'll be rocky. I think Joey's going to have a good second half. I don't think he's going to have a second half like he had last year, but I think he'll have a good second half. I think we'll see Bruce get traded, potentially Cozart get traded. That's probably about it. I don't know who else really would get dealt necessarily.
Yeah. The way I look at it is going to be a painful second half, but you got Peraza, Suarez, Billy Hamilton, Jesse Winker maybe come up. All those guys are 25 years or younger. You got guys like Reed, Stevenson, Finnegan, Iglesias, Lorenzen, maybe Amir Garrett comes up, DeSclafani, Lamb. These are guys all, 25, 26 or younger as well. And so those are some good reasons to watch this team. There's some teams, some pieces that could be around when the Reds are competitive again. So let's watch him develop. And you do still have Joey Votto, like you said, who has, I saw the stat today, the highest OPS in the major leagues since the All-Star break last year. Even as awful as he was in the first 50 games of the year or whatever, he has the highest OPS in the major leagues.
That's pretty incredible.
It really is. It surprised me. So, All right. Well, Joel, always great to talk to you, buddy.
Absolutely.
Again, you can, as we always say, go to iTunes, subscribe to the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. You can get the links at redlegnation.com for subscribing. You can get the links for all of our previous episodes as well, because there's bound to be 138 episodes better than this one that we just that we just recorded. Go to iTunes if you would, and leave us a review. That helps other people find us. And as we always say, tell your friends. If you like us, tell your friends. If you don't like us, keep your mouth shut. Follow Joel on Twitter at JLookup. That's J-L-U-C-K-H-A-U-P-T. I'm at Dotson C. You can follow us at Red Leg Nation, the site. And you can go to redlegnation.com every day for discussion about the Reds and everything going on around this this organization, this roller coaster ride of an organization. I guess that's about all. Joel, come back soon, please.
Perhaps.
think about it. At least think about it. For Joel Luckup, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.